After weeks of similar accusations made by Hillary Clinton's campaign, the Obama administration publicly charged that the Russian government had stolen and then leaked emails that were taken from the Democratic National Committee and Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. In a statement released on October 7th, James Clapper Jr., director of National Intelligence, said Russia had given the emails to WikiLeaks and other websites that were intended to interfere with the U.S. election process. For months now, government officials had pointed fingers at an individual who goes by the online name Guccifer 2.0, who they say is associated with Russian intelligence and was responsible for the hacking of U.S. emails. Following the official statement, Vice President Joe Biden went a step further by asserting in a TV interview that the U.S. is now working on plans to covertly retaliate against the Russian cyber attacks. The escalation of hostile rhetoric between Washington and Moscow over the hacked emails follows unsuccessful U.S.-Russian diplomatic efforts to negotiate a ceasefire in the besieged Syrian city of Aleppo, friction over Moscow's 2014 annexation of Crimea, and the Kremlin-backed rebel war in eastern Ukraine. Your reporter spoke with journalist and author Mark Ames, a founding editor of the satirical Moscow biweekly The Exile. Here Ames, who's lived and worked in Russia on and off for 14 years, explains why he's skeptical about widely accepted claims that the Russian government is responsible for the hacks of DNC and Hillary Clinton campaign emails, and the danger he sees of a developing new Cold War.
We're ramping up a very serious and potentially dangerous Cold War over these accusations, so I want actual evidence. So far, the evidence I've seen that everyone was waving around was apparently in the metadata on some of these hacks. Somebody called himself in Cyrillic letters, that is in the Russian alphabet. So it went by the name Felix Edmundovich, which is the name and patronym of Felix Dzerzhinsky, the founder of the Cheka, which became the KGB. Now, that being used as evidence that that was actually a GRU, a Russian military intelligence agent, because he used as his nickname the founder of the Cheka, is to me so absurd. It would be like an American spy mole, you know, mowing his way into North Korea and using as the super secret name Alan Dulles or something. You know, I mean, it's
Alan Dulles being the founder of the CIA, right?
Yeah, or one of the early directors and co-founders. Yeah, you have to know nothing about Russia to think that that is a plausible piece of evidence. I have a lot of questions, too. I mean, according to the timelines, according to these stories in various major newspapers, the FBI first noticed the hacks in June of 2015 and first told the DNC 2 months later. So now if the Russians are trying to make sure that Hillary Clinton doesn't win, if this is not a Clinton campaign strategy to deflect from what's actually in the emails and try and make it seem like you're a traitor – if you report them, if the Russians were actually trying to keep her out and they started hacking 6 months, 7 months before the first caucuses, why didn't they do a single thing to help Bernie Sanders ever? Why didn't they do anything up through, you know, April when it was still a contested primary, even up to early May, to help Bernie Sanders? This is a guy who spent his honeymoon in Soviet Russia in a banya with Soviet local officials in Yaroslavl. Obviously, this is the guy you'd want to help. Why would you wait till Donald Trump, this crazy buffoon? You know, she runs against him, the only person she can probably beat on the Republican side. So none of this just makes any sense to me.
What's your view of the concern by a growing number of people here in the United States that there's a new serious Cold War brewing between the United States and Russia, given the charges and countercharges about interference in the U.S. election by Moscow, given the history of tensions with Moscow over the annexation of Crimea and the border war in Ukraine? And then, of course, you've got the failed diplomacy to reach a ceasefire in Syria or to end that horrible war. What are your concerns about a new Cold War?
Oh, I think it's potentially very serious. I mean, I get that part of this heating up, this sort of new Cold War thing on the Clinton side and Clinton supporters, is to campaigns and politics are a rough business, and I get that. But I also think it's a genuine window into what to expect in the future. I'm assuming Hillary Clinton's going to win, and I'm assuming that this is not going to be the end of this. I'm assuming that this is going to be what we have to look forward to for the next 8 years, and very, very tense relations with the Russians. And you know, I find it extremely dangerous. I find it extremely dangerous because it seems like there's no strong voice pushing back against it. Certainly within the establishment, there's nobody pushing back. Nobody wants to be seen, for obvious reasons, as a, you know, defender of Vladimir Putin. It's not like, I mean, the Soviets at least stood for equality, equality of incomes, gender equality, and different things like that, at least on paper. You know, what does the Kremlin stand for? This is not a, it's a conservative, very conservative, neoliberal, conservative regime. So I don't think there's any pushback, and I think it's unleashing a lot of really crazy forces in this country. You know, revanchist cold warriors who never went away. I've seen that all my time out in Russia and since coming back.
Who, in your mind, are the main beneficiaries if the U.S. and Russia reignite a new Cold War?
The defense industry and the military-industrial complex, the military-intelligence complex, no doubt about it. There was a push by Hagel shortly before he was put into retirement to enact major cuts in 2014. Go back and, you know, reread the articles about it. The military was going to be cut down to its smallest size since the end of World War II, or since before World War II. You know, there were going to be serious cuts, and now that's over. And frankly, it helps the Russians too. I mean, I can tell you the Russians, you know, their pride was very wounded by their experience under Yeltsin. They were very humiliating years. They were essentially colonized and run from outside. And they didn't matter, and they were considered a joke. And there are people in the Kremlin who, I think Putin even said this, they like the fact that we talk about them as if they count and as if they're a menace and a rival. They like mattering, number one. Number two, it's good for their defense industries. But that said, you know, their defense budget, I think in the last 2 years, is in the $65 billion range. Ours is about $600 billion. And because of their economy has been hurting, the budgets for the next 3 years, they're cutting their military 6% per year, according to the published reports. So I'd say cold warriors on both sides, military-industrial complex on both sides, and then neocons in general. They love this. The neocons in Washington absolutely love this. They feel relevant again.
That was journalist and author Mark Ames, a founding editor of the satirical Moscow biweekly, The Exile. Find more analysis on the escalation of U.S.-Russian tensions by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.